on a cycling bike trail over there, and it was nice. Went to the cemetery, had a good time. And it's really fun going downhill, just coming back up. So I'm over here, a little humid, but I'll be fine. I won't pass out. Felt really good to cycle for a little while. And Mimi, thank you, Mimi, for all the putting up with me, taking me everywhere. Oh, and by the way, I want to thank the sisters who've been nothing but outstanding. And I checked with the main sister who talked. What's her name?
Helen.
Sister Helen. I've been a good boy. I haven't cussed. I haven't, you know, I've been really nice. And she says, well, more points for you. I said, thank you. So I got her approval. So I'm in with her. That's cool. So that's important. You don't want sisters upset with you. So,
wonderful.
So Friday I told you my story, how I got here. But I didn't get the whole detail. How I got to this program was my job where I was working my insurance was going to drop me because I was a health risk. So they sent me to a therapist, a beautiful brunette, and she said to me, have you ever gone to Ovaries Anonymous? I said, no, what's Ovaries Anonymous? Well, it's like AA. Oh, really? Well, I was new with AA. I've been there since 79. She said, yeah, but it's about food issues. And she's got this pretty big, beautiful eyes. And I'll go. Where do you want me to go? And I thought she was going to be there, so she sent me to this place. And she wasn't there. But who was there was this little woman named Mary at the podium speaking, a little tiny little thing. And somebody handed me a Polaroid of her. That's how long it was. I said, who's this? There's a woman that was in the picture here was the same height and the same diameter, so she was just like a ball. Who is it? Well, that's her. I said, no way. Ridiculous. So after the meeting, I went up to her and I said, hi, I saw that porter. That's not you, is it? So yes, that's me. Well, the question, how did you do it? I worked the program. Well, that sounds good to me. So I proceeded to stay in Ovaries Anonymous from 1983, and for 15 years, I did nothing but gain weight and lose weight, 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 gain weight. Up and down, up and down. Until 1998, I finally had it enough, and I gave up. And I was willing to walk and feel the feelings and put the food down and work the steps and do my writing and be honest with myself, my sponsors, and the rest of my fellows. I was willing to make amends. I was willing to clean my side of the street. I was willing. I was cheerfully compliant via misery. I got the gift of desperation. Okay, and that's what I hope you guys get from this retreat, the gift of desperation. That's the only way that's going to make you say, I give up. So if you do get the gift of desperation, good for you. God bless you. Keep coming back. I started attending programs, and I started working the steps, and I started calling in my food, weighing and measuring. I had to. My eyes were deceiving me. My eyes were too big and my plate looked too small, so it wasn't just, so I had to give some guidance of what ounces look like. 6 ounces of protein to me is like half a chicken. That's what I think it is, And then I was shown how to eat all this stuff. And in those days, when Ovaries Anonymous would have a retreat, the OA house and CEO house, and all, it was just one OA. And we would go to retreat, and you could tell the ones where the OA house were, because the other ones had the scales and measuring on one side of the table. And the Overeaters Anonymous, where they had all this big food. It was very funny to watch both groups. And they didn't interact, but they were staring at each other, back and forth. So that was funny, but it was good. And so I've met a lot of wonderful people in this program, and I've lost a lot of wonderful people in this program as well. Some of them have died in recovery. Some of them have died in relapse. So to those people that have gone before me, they have always been a blessing in my life. They touched my life. They talked about their recovery. I remember hearing one guy, bless you, I remember hearing one guy talk about his story, and it was just like mine, but he had something I didn't, and I said, I want what he has. And what he had was a sense of, first of all, tragedy, problems, but he had a spiritual life, huge spiritual life, that no matter what he was going through, he still trusted God, and I liked that. I've never done it. I admire that, because whenever I go into problems, I want the world to stop, and poor me, I'm going to die. So, but he didn't have that attitude. He was very spiritual and not human. He was human and not perfect, and I love that. So I proceeded to try to model this type of behavior, but I didn't know that he was doing something I wasn't. And what he was doing was he was surrendering, bless you, he was surrendering to God his life every day over and over. Sometimes he would surrender his life several times during the day because the will kick it back. So he would constantly surrender it. And I didn't understand that. I said, wow, how do you do that? So anyway, so I stayed in program. I got into all sorts of committees and comedy shops and comedy recovery comedy workshops and did a lot of things in L.A. And but in 1998, when my grandmother died, that's when I said, you know what, I need to do something about this. I mean, it's not fair. I mean, I've gone through all this stuff, and people kept telling me, well, maybe you should just leave. You know, it's not working for you. No, but, and so I still stayed. And if there's anything right that I've done in this program is I never left. That's the thing that I've done that I could say the only thing right. I never left. I have had a series of things that happened in my life that some people don't understand. I've gone through two divorces in this program. I've gone through financial ruin, health, and all that stuff. And I'm still here. I'm still here. The very things that I thought were going to take me out, I'm still here. I don't understand that. And yet at the same time, God still keeps me busy. So he's put me in a little town called Santa Barbara, California, about 65 miles north of, 80 miles from Los Angeles, in a small town. And I am doing so much there, I'm amazed. I'm speaking in high schools, I'm speaking in courts, I'm speaking in community centers, I'm speaking all over. People are coming to my office, and since it's such a small town, everybody reminds me, waves, hi, Daniel! Except the ones that are in court, they don't like to hear me and see me. Yes, they do. But outside of that, you know, it's really wonderful, and I'm really blessed to be in a community like that. So, when you take that third step, prepare for change. God is going to put you where you need to be. And he's going to take you up on it. And I say, I offer myself to thee. I didn't say, well, God, just keep me here in Los Angeles. You know, I offer myself to thee to do with me as thou wilt. To relieve me of bondage of self, that is a hard one. Because it's all about me. It's always about me. And when I die, it'll always be about me. So that is not good. I found out that even at this time, I've been fasting since 98, even this time, I still have moments of problems with abstinence. I'm a compulsive overeater. I'll always be a compulsive overeater. But I have very good days, not so good days, very good. So from a size 58 down to a size 34, you know, there's a big difference in sizes. That's cool. And if I go to size 36, that's all right. Yeah, I'm fine. Yeah, I'm happy. That's cool. But to be put in this position today and say, well, Daniel, since you've lost the weight, you don't have any problems, that's not true. But problems have come, and they're here, and they happen, and it's part of life. Where I suffer is when I resist these problems and I don't like it. That's where the problem gets into a pretty heavy turmoil in me. So if I asked you a question, what would you want change in your life? What would you want change? The majority of people would say, well, I want to have a better eating plan, or whatever, you know. But how about if you say, I just want to have a different way of thinking, a better attitude, looking at life on life's terms, as opposed to me thinking that the weight is only the problem. Now, the weight will come off. If you, you know, follow a food plan, it'll come off, but, you know, the problems will start. You know, and this is the thing. So I hate to say that the food is just a symptom, which it is. It's just a symptom, but darn right, you better learn how to really get disassociated with alcohol, with food, and to look at it as what it really is, just food, food, nutrition. I told you about my Vicodin and prune story, and my chicken wing. And the other day, I visited a friend who had lost a lot of weight, and she's weighing and eating, and weighing and measuring, and she brought her own lunch to lunch, and we're eating, and she had six little crackers. And my friend next to me says, "How about if you give me one of those crackers?" She goes, "No." She says, "Just one." And she says, "Don't F with my food." And she was serious. Whoa. Okay, back off, time out. You know, she was going to kill us if we touched those crackers. And I said, "Wow." I said, "Are you white-knuckling it?" And that's what she was doing. She was white-knuckling it. Anything that do that causes me to white-knuckle it, I'm not letting God handle it. Because when you white-knuckle, you get tired. You can only hold on to so long where you just got to revert back to the old ways. And you say, "Well, it didn't work for me again." Well, surrender doesn't involve white-knuckling. Surrender means that you recognize your limitations, you recognize your weaknesses, and you recognize that somebody's already kicked your butt several times. And you want to make peace with that. And I'm willing to follow any direction you want. Does your life get better? Theoretically, maybe no. But it'll be a change. Yeah. There are several things in life that I have trouble with. One of them is loss. I don't like to lose things. When I went to the cemetery, there's a purpose I went for the cemetery. It's because it's in my belief system, our loved ones don't disappear. They are still here. During the Second World War, they were finding that the people that were handling post-traumatic stress disorders better than the other regular part of our community were the American Indian, because they were following their ancestors in communication with them. Whereas us, we were suffering from post-traumatic stress disorders, and we have no connection. Our society today, what we do with the elderly, we put them in a home, and that's where they die. In some cultures, elderly are revered as the patriarchs or matriarchs, and they are revered and respected. Today, we don't have time, so we put them in a convalescent hospital, a convalescent home, and if they're visited maybe once a month, that's a lot. You know, and then they finally pass on. And so I believe firmly that all my friends that have passed on are here. They manifest themselves to you, and that is God's love to me. So when I was walking in that cemetery, I felt really awed that people had died from 18 years old, 30 years old, 40 years old, 50 years old, but rarely were there any people that were really 80, 90. You know, I couldn't see any. And someone was saying probably the yellow fever that happened or whatever at that period of time could have been. That's interesting. But what about me today? What is it going to take for me to understand that I'm not alone in life? What is it going to take for me to understand that if I looked at the person next to me and said, "Could you please help me?" Why do I doubt that that won't happen? Why is it so hard to say, "Help me"? Why is it difficult? Why is it so hard to say, "Could you please help me"? I don't know why. Maybe I'm afraid of rejection. Maybe I'm afraid they're going to say no. Well, you know, let's give them the opportunity to say no, but let's not cast judgment now. Yeah, if you say no to me, well, I gave you a chance. Then I go to the next person. Could you help me? Two drunks said, "You keep me sober and I'll keep you sober." That's how it worked. The big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, you don't have the word sponsor. The chapter that they say was sponsors working with others, it doesn't say sponsor. Because I'm just another drunk trying to help another drunk. That's basically it. You know, you've helped me. And I find it fascinating how we've given sponsors this big, almost godlike, they're not. They're human beings as well as us, you know. And my sponsor just went through a bout of depression. And I was wondering what happened to him because I was in here for him for 2, 3, 4 weeks. So where'd he go? And then I saw him. Are you all right? And, well, I got that bout of depression. I said, oh, I'm sorry to hear that, man. Should have, you know, can I do anything to help? Because I'm coming out of it. I'm feeling better. Okay, well. He didn't choose to reach out. That's fine. Or maybe he reached out to someone else. I don't know. But the thing is, he's going through his issues as well. Today, we have a lot of medications, a lot of pharmaceuticals, treating depression, bipolarism, all sorts of drugs that are out there. And yes, they may work, or no, they don't. Well, that, I don't have an opinion on them. Whatever you need to do to take care of yourself, take care of yourself. But, you know, it depends how, ooh, guess what happened? You know what happened? You kitty, kitty, where'd he go? He was right here, right now. And somebody just caused him to die. So this retreat cost about how many kitties? About 4? At the gift of desperation is probably one of the biggest things I could wish upon you. The gift of desperation. When you're willing to say, hey, I want in that lifeboat. I don't care where you're going to put me, how you're going to dress me. Just get me out of the water because I'm drowning. Help me get me in. That's the gift of desperation. You don't put conditions. You say, yes, I'll do it. I was taught that if you're asked to be of service, you don't say no. You say yes because that's God asking you to do something. Never volunteer for anything. You'll be asked. The other day I checked poor in and I told her she knew how to ride a bike. She said, yes, well, I'm going to open up with the serenity prayer then. You know, it's an old trick. You know, and this is the thing. We become so scared of service that we don't even want to do nothing. Well, service is for my recovery. So I remember they made me coffee person at one big meeting and I ran out of decaf. So I don't know the difference. So I mixed them all in. And made these brick pots and ladies are coming. Is this decaf? Oh, yeah. They start drinking and, oh, this is really good. Yeah, they come back for more. And next thing you know, they're bouncing off to the chairs where they're sitting. And one lady comes up, are you sure that's decaf? I said, well, yeah, I'll look at the can. And then I would tell my sponsors, you're not going to believe it. I lied. I ran out of decaf and I used regular coffee. And? I said, well, those poor ladies were jumping and bouncing off the chairs. He said, well, you need some to do some amend, pal. And it goes, yeah, I'm sorry. It was caffeinated coffee. Oh, my God, I didn't sleep for days, and I felt so bad. And I couldn't wait to get away from that service commitment, and they never voted me back into that position, by the way. I don't know why. I messed up once. Get them. Well, go ahead. You never ask an OA-er to split a meal. And I said, are you serious? She says, yes, it's really a lot of food. We'll split it in half. And then, well, what if there's not enough food? You know, and what if I'm hungry after this? And I said, no, 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 I can't do that. She said, sure, don't worry about it. So she tells the waiter, we'll get this meal. And I'm going, looking at him. Kill me, kill me. And sure enough, it was enough meal. But I don't have no concept of how, well, you know, I just want to make sure that my plate is mine, and it's mine, it's mine, it's mine. Because I give food magical powers. I don't want to give food magical powers. It's no longer needed. You know, this God called food can't be the same God that is guiding my life. So remember, food is a symptom. It's not the cause. Any problem that I'm not dealing with appears on my plate, and it appears as excess food. That's it. I spoke at an OA HOW meeting, and they are into the weighing measure and all that stuff. And I asked them, are you guys happy with your meal plan? Yes. And they're like this, gritting their teeth. I said, you guys got nothing that I want, man. I said, I really don't want to be like neurotic, you know. And they were like, counting string beans, how many are supposed to go? I said, wait a minute, man. I don't know if I want to do that because I ordered the corn, loose corn. Oh, shit, I got to start all over. You know what I mean? And so, yes, we will change if we continue to follow our path that's been given to us. Yes, we will change if we're willing to surrender our life over the care of God. Yes, we will change. The food will take care of itself as long as we're accountable for it. Okay? That's basically it. That's how simple it is. But you know what? I'm more complicated. You don't understand. I'm different. And that's when my sponsor would roll her eyes. Here we go again. Because I don't want to let go of food. Danny, she would say, just stick to what you said you were going to eat. Do you know the people that have lost the weight, they eat the same thing, same amount? They always eat. My sponsor eats the same damn thing every day. Oatmeal, fruit, milk, and Coke. And bacon, I think. So what do you have tomorrow for breakfast? Oatmeal, bacon, toast, and orange juice. That's it? Yeah. How about next day? Oatmeal. It's the same thing. Why? Because it works. It's comfortable like that. I like to get creative. Oh, you don't understand. There's a wonderful breakfast joint that just opened up, and they give you all this food, and I'm going to go home and look for grits, apparently. I'm going to get creative. You know? And this is the stuff that people think that, oh, I want to be a compulsive overeater and have all the liberties. I can't do that. It's just not going to work. It's kind of like telling an alcoholic, here, you can have a beer and just have a couple of sips every 2 hours. Right. So the idea here is not to be compulsively overeating. That we do set a time when we're going to eat. Now, here's another thing. Sometimes I don't get hungry and I forget to eat. That is unheard of. But it's true. I'm in the office and I'm so busy. I haven't had lunch. It's 5 o'clock. What do? I go have dinner. Do I replace the lunch that I missed? No. It's just a dinner. Oh, but it's ultimate. Here we go back to the victim. I've endured to be entitled to be rewarded in child. That's a victim. If I miss the meal, I'm not going to make it up on the following meal. I'm going to stick to the same amount. You want to know what I had for dinner the night before? Cheese sandwich. That's it. I was too nervous about the chip. I used to eat when I was sad, lonely, sick. When I was sick, I always ate. And people said, "You're eating? Yeah, I'm sick." And little did I know, I was prophesying something there. But you know, and now I get sick and I don't eat. I actually leave food on my plate. I don't eat anymore. I actually have a switch now that shuts it off. You know? But that wasn't like that before. And it didn't happen overnight either. But I trust that what God has inspired these sisters to cook for us is God inspired, and that's what God's supposed to give to me. God also lives in my refrigerator.
Instead of bringing us comfort, it causes misery, overeating.
Definitely, sure. This is very important that we understand that. And I said that before. I never did find comfort in comfort food. I always felt like crap afterwards. But then you were supposed to just have a bowl of that chowder, not a pot. So, how is your life? You know, how's your relationships? You know, how do you interact with your family? How do you interact with your friends, your coworkers? You know, how is that? because I have a dis-ease with life. Dis-ease with life. There's another kitten that went down. Gosh. I can't take this. Another kitten bit the dust. So, you know, I have a living problem. That's my only problem. And I blame you guys for all my problems. So I say, well, if I just lived alone, I'd be all right. No. The nut job that lives in here is alive and well. And so I need to take measures to take care of myself. How do I do that? I share my will and my life with the care of God every day in the morning. It's your job, God. And I've learned to distinguish between what's God's job and God's will. Big difference. I was doing God's job all the time, getting frustrated and pissed off. Anything outside of me belongs to God. Is that another kitten that just went down? Poor kittens. There are not going to be enough kittens anymore. I'll have to bring some from California next time. You're going to have to write about all this when you guys see it. If there was a magic bullet, I would give it to you. If there was like a magical solution, I would do that. You know, if I just go to this meeting, I go to this, no. You know what? OA is OA and it's OA wherever it is. It's the same. We have problems as well in our programs over there in Los Angeles and Santa Barbara. Same thing. You know, we got that fat serenity that goes around from all, oh, well, that's the way God wants me. Well, no, it doesn't. You know, and we deal with it, you know. And we only deal with it when the person's willing to talk about it. We don't force them. That's why we say we love you until you die, until death, which is really kind of sad. But, you know, we can't force recovery on anybody else. We really can't. And I can't tell you that my way is the correct way. You're going to have to find that out for yourself, what's going to be correct for you. Because what works for me may not work for you. And this is the setup my disease does. It gets into a pink cloud where everything is great, nothing bothers me, and something happens to me to fall off of that pink cloud, and I spiral back to the same place where I was before. And it's happened to me many, many, many times. Because why? Because I put my faith and all my program based on one person, a human being. Human beings are human. They make mistakes. They screw up. But if I place my trust on God, my higher power who happens to be content with me, I'm cycling right now. I'm having a ball. Mimi's on her electric cart, and I'm over here pedaling, and we got into the cemetery, and on the way back, well, it's a little slope, and it's grassy. Now, I'm used to switching gears and all that stuff. No, this is just a regular pedal bike. Now, I'm like puffing and puffing and huffing and puffing. I said, I got to get off this bike and push it. And I accepted the fact that I was not going to make it all the way up that hill. So I'm pushing that thing to that grassy area. And I thought Mimi's going to think I'm a weakling. No. You know, people really don't think about me as I thought. You know, very few people get up in the morning thinking, how can I mess with Daniel today? You know, very few people do. But why do I take things so personally? Because I'm an alcoholic. I'm a very sensitive person with an egomaniac complex. You know, the person that cuts me off in traffic did it on purpose. That crazy. And I want to catch up to him so I can give him the old Daniel glare. Yeah. I don't take things personally. That's your opinion. If I say it once, it's my opinion. I say it twice, now I'm trying to control you. And I love it. Family members think we're stupid. Don't eat too much. You're going to get fat. I used to love my grandmother. She said, Danny, you're getting too big, and I'm afraid you're going to have a heart attack. And then she'd go in the kitchen, here, I got you some donuts. I said, why would you get me donuts? Well, I know you like them. You just told me, you know, and she couldn't make the connection. You know, and that's the way families are. You got to lose weight. Well, I beg it for you. You mean you're not going to eat it? I love it when they say, here, just have one cookie and have one a day. You'll be fine. I dated this woman who whose father really liked me, and he handed me a pair of shorts. Now, I'm size 400 at that time, and he handed me a pair of shorts. It must have been about extra large or something like that. But, and he made me try them on, and they only went up to my knees. And he said to me, I'm going to give those to you, so give you the motivation to wear them, lose weight, and wear those shorts. See if I got this straight. These freaking old white shorts are going to give me the motivation to lose weight so I can get in them? And I looked at her and I said, is your dad crazy? I'm not going to get in these damn shorts and lose weight for that. You know, it requires an act of desperation. It requires an act of having enough. It requires an act of surrendering. It requires an act of being cheerfully compliant, which is meaning willingness. It requires for me to live in acceptance daily. Daily. It requires me to live in the answer, not in the problem. What's the answer to my daily problem today? Acceptance. My wife is going to be, well, Dan, if you had my wife, I'd drink too. You know, well, I guess so. And one guy read the scripts like this one day. He said, you admit it, we were powerless over alcohol and our wives have become unmanageable. Now, that wasn't smart because she was in the meeting. So we laughed, but with a lot of sadness in our heart. We know he was going to die when he left us. I went out to start, pal. Nice meeting you. Because she glared at him, you know. So, there is no magical formula, but there is the capacity to stop making food your God. Every time we obsess over food, when am I going to eat? What am I going to eat? When am I going to eat? Just obsessing. The same thing. If you can obsess about other things, now that's the problem. Because when I start obsessing about, no longer about food, I start obsessing about you. And you don't appreciate the advice I have for you. But let me fix it. And you get pissed off at me and you say, you know, Daniel, I don't want to hear your crap. Then I walk away indignant. How dare her? I'm doing it for her own good. You know what? People have a right to make their own decisions. You have a right. People have a right to change their mind. Nothing is set in stone. I don't know where I got this perfectionist image in my head that says that everything I say has to be done exactly to the letter. And I've been put myself in big problems because of that thinking. So today, I can call a friend and say, you know what, I know we're going to have lunch. I need to cancel. I canceled on someone Thursday before I came in, Friday. I said, look, I'm not going to be able to make dinner. I said, you know, meet you for dinner. I said, I got this trip and I need to plan some stuff. And I can't go. I hope you understand. She said, fine. Let's go. Make it some other time. Okay. I emailed my sponsor, say, having a good time. I think I know how to say the town I'm in. So I spelled it out for him. And I still don't want to say it, but here it goes again. Chattawa. I feel accomplished. I really do. Not Chattawa, but heck, man. Chattawa. Okay. And, you know, and I told him, hey, I learned how to eat grits. With a fork. Butter. Pepper. Thank you. That was, I told him, hey, it's very important. And if you put cheese down there, anyway, it just gets just deteriorates from there. But anyway, so I told him, hey, listen, I'm having a good time and I'm meeting a lot of cool people. And it's wonderful to be here because I'm getting from them too. I'm getting from them too. So listen, God didn't put us here alone. This is why he made this reprogram thing. We are here to be with each other. We are here to help each other. We are here to listen. We understand. Who else could understand our disease but another compulsive eater? So go to a friggin' doctor who doesn't have a weight problem. Yes, you get on the scale, and they give you the riot act. You know, you're going to die before you're 50. If you continue. Well, you know, screw you. I don't want to hear you. You know, you arrogant. Screw you. Know, I went to a doctor, and he's checking my back. He's an orthopedic surgeon. He says, so what do you do for a living? So I told him what I do for a living. Then he starts telling me about his son. Well, my son, I think he has a problem. Hey, Doc, I'm here for me. Not your son or you. Me. Remember, I don't want to talk about what I do neat. The back here, there's something wrong here. You know, and so I need to keep the focus where it needs to be. But people love to talk about themselves. And it's great when I have time to listen. But sometimes I don't have time to listen. So a sponsor will call me. They'll say, now they've learned. I say, damn, how much time do you have to listen to me? How much time do you have? I say, well, okay, Dave, I got 5 minutes then before I got to go start my class. Okay, I'll make it quick. Have you ever been on a phone over and over and over and you're looking at your clock and that person won't shut up? And you're like, you put the phone down, go to the bathroom, come back and pick it up. And you go, uh-huh, put the phone down. And you know, and I started doing that with my sponsor, and he says, Dan, are you focusing on the solution or on the problem? Because all you've been doing is talking about the problem. What is the solution, Dan? And 9 out of 10 is work the steps, surrender, just that. That's not what I want to hear. You know, I should have other answers, but no, that's what works. You know, so when this thing called Overeaters Anonymous Retreat ends tomorrow, you know, we're going to go back. We're going to go back. And we get to practice what we've learned. But perhaps this is not going to be the life-changing retreat that you were waiting for. Maybe it's going to take another year. But it's in God's plan. It's not my plan. You know, or some of you will take something you'll never forget. Good for you. And some of you will walk away with a gift of desperation. Good for you as well. But nothing happens in God's world by accident. It happens for a reason. And this is the stuff that has taken too many years to understand that. Because I'm a big knucklehead, and I believe that I'm right in many things, and sometimes life teaches me, no, change happens. God has other plans, and you need to accept that. And I try to stay as I can close to God in many things. But I have my faults. I have my, you know, God all scary. When I get scared, I feel I need to speak up. Because you scared me. You scared me. And I need to say something. So I went to my coworker. And I said to her, I would like to get my check in advance. She says, you know, we already did this for you earlier this year. We don't like doing that. And I got all indignant off the spot. Well, I should have known better, blah, blah. And I walked the right start. Now, this woman has nothing to do with what my fear caused, but she was the one that got the brunt of my stuff. I walked back to my office and said, oh, my God, what did I say that for? She's a real nice woman. And then I instant messaged her. I said, I'm sorry. She said, I don't have time to talk to you right now. Oh, no, she hates me. Oh, my God. You know, this is me. So, you know, oh, my God, she hates me. Well, when you get a chance, I said, I need to talk to you. Okay. She hates me. No, I'll never beat you. I'll never be my friend. Well, no, I went up to her. She says, listen, I am so sorry. I apologize. I'll tell you what happened. Listen, I wrote a check, and I found out I don't have enough funds to cover it. I'm afraid it's going to bounce. That's why. I told her the truth. That it wasn't her and her policies. It was me and my fears. Fears make me do crazy things. You know? So then I went to the phone company. I said, hey, fellas, I cut you a check. And I was wondering if you guys would mind either holding off on the check or give it back, and I'll pay you what I have right now. She says, don't worry, it cleared. What? It cleared. You mean with all the crap that I went over with my friend and apologizing, coming here to you, telling the truth to her, and you're telling me it cleared? She says, yeah. So now she knows I don't handle my money well. She's going to think I'm stupid. She's going to think I'm more responsible. Right? That's where the, you know, my hamster's dead in the wheel, but the wheel's still spinning. See? So my life is left on the thinking. The organ that's between the ears, behind the eyes, that's where the malady lives. And the malady manifests itself in the food. And my head says, yeah, if you just fix your food, everything will be right. No, it's not true. You're going to be crazier than a nut. You will. I remember I lost weight, a lot of weight one time, and I was crazy. I was like this. You know, and my sponsor said, why don't you sit down? Okay, but I just got to help you put those chairs. Now, I set up the chair in a circle, and I put it up perfectly 4 inches separate from every, and somebody came in and moved a damn chair. And I looked at that person like, do you know how much trouble I just went to making that perfect circle? And she wouldn't even look at me. And I'm like, move the chair. You move the chair. It's perfect. Overeaters Anonymous has taught me many things. It's taught me how to have friendships. It's taught me how to have friends, both male and female friends. It's taught me to tell the truth. Like my sponsor says, when you say the truth, you don't have to remember much. Did I say this, 2 ounces, I said 3 ounces? Just tell the truth. And it's taught me so much, and I'm very grateful to you guys. I owe you my life. You've done me a favor bringing me here. You've done me. See, you guys. There is no magical program in Los Angeles and Santa Barbara. We're just like you guys. We're in different areas of our path. Some have more recovery, some don't, but we're all there. But we depend on each other. That's the cool part. Because it's about us, not about me. And I guess how much more do you got to go? Can I wrap up? I got 243. Yeah? Wrap up? Okay. So, to wrap up, let me explain to you. If this week you can get the gift of desperation, go for it. I would ask God, God, give me the gift of desperation, where I'll be willing to do anything I can. Right? But also, give me a heart of compassion. A heart of compassion for my fellow orators. Compassion. That's the important part. Because if I don't have love in my heart for you guys, it doesn't mean it means nothing. I may have the right information, but the wrong motives. And that's what I need to understand. I want to have the right information and the right motives. I want to think with my heart and my head connected together. And that's what God's Space is all about. We can make a bridge to connect those together if we're willing to do the work. Okay? On that note, thank you.